Chapter 11, Visiting Churches in Sweden, Land of the Child Preachers. At Malmo, Ellen White, along with Willie, Sarah, and Elder Madison, boarded the train and after an all-night journey reached Stockholm. There that Friday morning to welcome the party to a busy time in Sweden was C. Norlin, a dedicated colporteur who took them to his new apartment at Westmanagatan 34. Ellen White developed a great respect for these self-sacrificing literature evangelists who she said were poor but very excellent people. Norlin went on foot from place to place carrying Swedish books printed in America. The profits were extremely small in these little volumes, since the production costs in America were high, and the shipping costs further trimmed his meager earnings. On some books Norlin made as little as 3 cents. Fortunately, at the General Conference session later in the year, the SDA Publishing Association voted to furnish publications to foreign missions at the cost of production. W. C. White, who attended the session, probably helped to influence the decision. The Norlins had just moved into a new brick apartment house, and plasterers and carpenters had not yet finished their work. As Mrs. White struggled up the 4 flights of stone stairs and into one of the rooms, she discovered that the plaster was still wet. "We felt that we were surrounded by ice," she lamented. Perhaps they might go to a hotel, but since neither she nor Sarah could speak any Swedish, that might cause more problems than it would solve. Just at the time when she was wondering where she could stay, Sister L.P. Johannesson came to invite them to her home. This woman, who had spent some years in America, not only could speak English but had a cozy little home at 15 Perlmetergatan on a hill in the suburbs of the city. Her husband, a salesman, had not yet accepted the Sabbath, but he believed it and was not opposed to the Seventh Day Adventists. The couple were very kind and attentive to Ellen White's and Sarah's needs. The two Americans were taken to a third-floor parlor that had been reserved for them, and were pleased to find it dry and well heated. "We were pleasantly surprised to find the table very much the same as at our sanitarium at Battle Creek," Mrs. White wrote. "The dishes were simple and healthful, and prepared with a skill and nicety that made them inviting and palatable." Then her missionary spirit was stirred as she wrote, "There is a great need of a more general knowledge of the science of healthful cookery. There is a wide field of usefulness open to intelligent, experienced cooks in teaching young ladies how to prepare plain, simple food in a palatable and healthful manner." Ibid. There were other aspects of life in this lovely Swedish home that impressed Ellen White. The Scandinavian children seem remarkably quiet and well-trained. Wherever we went, they came forward, one by one, and shook hands with us, the girls making a curtsy, and the boys a low bow. Sister Johannesson's 4 children, from the girl of 8 down to the 3-year-old boy, welcomed us in this manner when we came, and whenever they met us, morning, noon, or evening, the greeting was repeated. At another place where we visited, even the little girl of 2.5 years went through the ceremony with credit. Mr. Johannesson was training his children in singing, and we enjoyed the music of their little voices blending together in sacred songs. Ibid. The historical climate of Stockholm. The American travelers were fascinated by the beauty of Stockholm, as well as its rich historical atmosphere. The Swedish city had been called the Venice of the North, but it reminded Ellen White of San Francisco, the well-known Pacific Coast city near her home at Healdsburg, California. She wrote of Stockholm's charm as follows. "Its situation, upon islands, on a plain, and on rocky hills surrounded by water and islands in every direction, is exceedingly picturesque. There are few cities in Europe whose general aspect is more attractive than that of this northern capital." Seventh-day Adventist work in Stockholm had been pioneered by Olaf Johnson and C. Norlin. Johnson was converted by Madison in Oslo, and then had returned with Norlin to his native Sweden to share what he had learned. In the fall of 1884, Elder Madison himself came to Stockholm. He found the city primarily committed to the Lutheran faith, but also exhibiting a large degree of religious diversity and interest, with Separatists, Baptists, and the Salvation Army all fairly strong. Madison and Johnson held several series of meetings, and by the time Ellen White reached the city, a Seventh-day Adventist church of about 90 members was thriving, elevating the standard of piety. She spoke on Friday evening, October 16th, to a full hall on the true vine of. Madison interpreted for her into Swedish, though he was more comfortable translating into Danish. He had noted a strong antinomian element among the people of Stockholm and, after listening to God's servant preach, he suggested to her that she should speak less of duty and more in regard to the love of Jesus. "But I wish to speak as the Spirit of the Lord shall impress me," she wrote in her diary. "The Lord knows best what this people needs." And when she preached the next morning in church on, she did not round the corners at all. "My work is to elevate the standard of piety and true Christian life, and urge the people to put away their sins and be sanctified through the truth. I tried to impress them with the necessity of strictly observing the Sabbath according to the commandment." Ibid. Even though Madison sincerely believed this was the wrong approach, the people responded warmly to Ellen White's message. There was a precious social meeting after the sermon, during which many expressed their desire to keep the Sabbath more carefully and confessed that they had gained a new sense of the offensive character of sin. Ibid. Sunday she spoke again to a hall so crowded with people that one woman fainted. All through this day in Stockholm she continued to suffer from the cold, foggy weather. She was sometimes afraid she would permanently damage her lungs, but she said, "My prayer day by day is, keep me, my Savior, and permit not that I shall leave this country before my work is done." Ibid. There was yet another sermon on Monday about the second coming of Christ. That night it snowed, and Sister White observed how the four Johannesson children, aged 8 down to 3, were happily getting out their sleds, full of joy at the prospects of good snow and a happy time sledding. Did Mrs. White wish that she were young again? The joys of childhood were pleasant to her, and she counseled parents to make happy homes for their children. "Youth cannot be made as sedate and grave as old age, the child as sober as the sire. While sinful amusements are condemned, as they should be, let parents, teachers, and guardians of youth provide in their stead innocent pleasures which will not taint or corrupt the morals. Do not bind down the young to rigid rules and restraints that will lead them to feel themselves oppressed and to break over and rush into paths of folly and destruction. With a firm, kind, considerate hand hold the lines of government, guiding and controlling their minds and purposes, yet so gently, so wisely, so lovingly, that they will still know that you have their best good in view." Indications of Reformation History. While in Stockholm, Ellen White was again alert for indications of Reformation history. She knew of the valiant exploits of Gustavus Adolphus, King of Sweden, in the early 17th century, when he hurled his small but powerful armies against the Roman Catholic Emperor Ferdinand and his massive forces. In the full tide of success, Gustavus fell, but his people, true to the purpose for which his blood was shed, continued the struggle, until a peace was won which delivered all northern Europe from the papal yoke. Ellen White doubtless visited the tomb where Gustavus' body lay, for she wrote, "In the old Ruderholm's church at Stockholm the body of Gustavus is entombed. The following inscription is placed near his resting place: He undertook difficult things, he loved piety, he conquered his enemies, extended his kingdom, exalted the Swedes, and delivered the oppressed, and he triumphed in death." Ibid. In her writing of Reformation history for the great controversy at Basel in the months that followed, she called to mind these events linked to the places she visited. In writing the great controversy, she also described religious revivals in Sweden in connection with the worldwide Advent proclamation of the early 1840s. See, the information she gained on the scene while she was in Sweden provided more historical details. She explained, "The message was brought to this country from England. In the province of Örebro it began to be proclaimed in the year 1843, by several laymen, called Roper. These preached with great earnestness that the hour of God's judgment had come, and a widespread interest was aroused among the people. In the fall of the same year, two young men were moved to give the warning. The people assembled in great numbers to listen to their preaching, and the meetings were continued both day and night, sometimes in a private house, and sometimes in the woods. The priest of the state church made several attempts to stop the preaching and to lull the people to sleep again, but without avail. Finally, the police were ordered to arrest them, and for 6 weeks they searched for them in the woods, but in vain. Through the efforts of the priest, they were finally arrested and imprisoned. These young men left behind them an account of the tortures and indignities that they suffered, including merciless beatings and incarceration in an insane asylum, but they escaped with their lives. They continued preaching after the king issued an order that they should not be molested. When asked by the governor by what authority they were sent to preach, they replied, "And they testified simply, 'The Spirit of God came upon us with such power that we could not resist it.'" For almost a year they continued their proclamation of the Advent message. From that time they continued to labor undisturbed. About the middle of the year 1844, however, the power which they had before possessed left them. The truths they had presented appeared as clear and forcible as ever, but the warning having been given, the special manifestation of God's Spirit which had been bestowed to aid its proclamation ceased. Phenomena of the Child Preachers. For more than a year between the autumn of 1842 and the winter of 1843, another spiritual miracle took place, the ministry of the Child Preachers. Mrs. White writes of this, "In many places where the power of the clergy was exercised to prevent the preaching of the Advent truth, the Lord was pleased to send the message through little children, some only 6 to 8 years old. As they were under age, the law of the state could not restrain them, and they were permitted to speak freely and unmolested. Thus the warning of the soon coming judgment was given to the people." Ibid. After recounting the experience of the child preachers, Ellen White commented, "Years ago, the work of the first message in these countries was presented before me, and I was shown circumstances similar to those related above. It was God's will that the tidings of the Savior's coming should be given in Sweden, and when the voices of His servants were silenced, He put His Spirit upon the children, that the work might be accomplished. So history records these miraculous events in Sweden for later generations to recall, lest the Adventists forget or deny the mighty power of God at work in the Advent proclamation of the 1840s and the significance of the judgment that began in the most holy place of the heavenly sanctuary October 22, 1844. On Wednesday, after a stay of 5 days, Ellen White and those who traveled with her left Stockholm. Her hosts, the Johannessons, drove her to the station in a hack, and many Stockholm Adventists were there to say goodbye. "I felt my heart knit with these dear friends in love," she wrote with affection, "and I was so very sorry that most of them could not understand me, neither could I understand them, except through an interpreter." Next stop, Grythet. Her destination was Grythet, Sweden, but to get there they had to change trains 3 times and stay overnight along the way. The first change came that afternoon. During the 2-hour delay, she and Willie took a long walk in the cool, bracing air. Then in the evening they came to Copperberg. Here they remained until midnight Thursday. Mrs. White was alert and observant of the charming Swedish people and their colorful way of life. She noted the large copper and iron mines, the red and green dwellings. She even described the quaint sod roofs. They prepare them by putting birch bark on the roof and then turf over that, which makes the house warm and free from dampness. The grass grows on this turf, keeping it fresh and alive, and sometimes flowers are planted in the turf. The appearance is rather nice. Ibid. The next morning she partook of a genuine Swedish smorgasbord in the hotel dining room. It was all new to her, and she was duly impressed. "There is no stinginess manifested. There is a most liberal supply placed before you, and you can eat plentifully of any and every dish for 40 cents each." Ibid. Elder Madison was traveling with Ellen White's party, and on Thursday she spent some time in conversation with him on theological questions he brought to her mind. God gave much light to Ellen White on doctrinal themes that is reflected in her articles and books. See her book The Faith I Live By. At midnight on Thursday, October 22nd, they boarded the train for Grythet. This town, about 150 miles northwest of Stockholm, was the site of the oldest Seventh-day Adventist church in Sweden. J. P. Rosquist came to this place in April, 1880. After some interest had been aroused by Adventist literature, by August he was able to organize a church of 47 members. Fierce opposition by the pastor of the state church resulted in the arrest of Rosquist and his imprisonment in Orebru. When Ellen White reached the town, she was met by a brother, C.G. Hedden, and his wife. Hedden was a painter who had lived a life of dissipation that had brought him to poverty, but when he heard the Advent message and accepted it, his whole life changed. His business fortunes improved with his life and character. He had even served as president of the fledgling Swedish Conference in 1883. Now he was employing several men. He expressed his gratitude to Christ and the message that saved him by reserving two rooms of his two-story house exclusively for visiting ministers, much as the Israelitish widow did for the itinerant Elisha. Reaching the Hedden home, Ellen White was escorted to one of these comfortable rooms. The weather was clear and cold, and in the morning a fire was kindled. She described the unique Swedish stove. "The surface looks like porcelain, white as milk and highly polished. These reach to the top of the room and a fire is made in them as in a fireplace." The breakfast was another new experience for the visitor. There was a round table with a cloth upon it and a flower pot in the center, and bread, a quarter of uncut cheese, hot milk, and fried cakes, which constituted our breakfast. We were invited to come to the table, all standing. A blessing was asked and then we stood around the table, took something in our hands, and walked about, talking and eating. Plates were then brought in and we put our food upon the plates. After the meal is finished, the guests shake hands with the landlord and landlady, thanking them for the food. Ibid. There were meetings on Friday night and Sabbath morning of this weekend. Her text for the Sabbath message was, "Well over 100 people attended these services." Ellen White's room in the Hedden house was furnished with a convenient writing desk, and as usual she spent part of her time working on manuscripts and letters. She made some additions to her sermons given at the European Council in Basel. Then she forwarded them to Mary K. White with instruction that Mary should copy them and mail them on to the president of the General Conference, George R. Butler, to be read to the delegates at the upcoming General Conference session at Battle Creek. When she addressed the church Sunday afternoon, she gave a special message for the believers about the time of trial and persecution that still awaited those who, like Rosquist, would hold fast to the truth of God. "The most bitter and cruel persecution always comes from those who have the form of religion without the spirit and power of godliness," she told them. "There is nothing at which religious prejudice will hesitate." But she reassured the believers by adding, "Angels are watching the development of character, and are weighing moral worth. They are bidden to place a mark upon those who are loyal to God's commandments. Such will have special help from God to endure the test and proving of the time of trouble." The cold weather, 25 degrees below freezing, the strain of travel, and the many meetings were almost too much for Ellen White. She returned to her room Sunday evening unable to sit up or eat, but by Monday, she was better, and able to attend a special dinner at the home of a gracious sister named Achman. This woman's husband was a merchant, but not an Adventist. Again there was a full-scale Swedish smorgasbord. On Tuesday, October 27, Ellen White and her party left by train for Orebru. They arrived in a rainstorm. To make it worse, there was no carriage waiting for them. The weary travelers had to walk more than half a mile in the rain to the home where they were to stay. When they arrived, Mrs. White was experiencing sharp pains in her heart. It was an hour of trial for her. Then a carriage was obtained to whisk her away, heart pains and all, to the meeting hall. When she walked into the place where the people had gathered, she was deeply distressed. It was a suite of three rooms and a private house. The largest room would hold 100 people on its backless benches, the other two about 20 each. But there was a full crowd on both Wednesday and Thursday nights. For this she was grateful, but her mind reverted to the Copenhagen experience where she had likewise been distressed by the lack of a representative meeting hall. A significant dream. Wednesday night a dream was given to her. In this dream she was talking with Elder Madison. "How far would a light send its rays if it were placed under a bushel?" she asked him. "No farther than the compass of the bushel," was the answer. "How far would it shine if put under a bed?" she asked. It would not illuminate the room, Madison answered. It would be too low and too obscure. Then, place your light on a candlestick, and it will give light to all that are in the house. Your ideas need to be enlarged and elevated. The people have lost an opportunity to obtain light that God desired them to have. But in spite of cramped quarters, the people appreciated Ellen White's visit. The Lord helped me to speak, she recounted, and hearts were reached, I know, by the starting tears and the look of interest on many faces. Ibid. Before leaving Oribru, the party visited an old castle, and on their way to the station on Friday, they stopped at the jail where Rosquist had been imprisoned for preaching the Advent message in Griffith, Oribru and the Petrie, Patterson, brothers. While in Oribru, Ellen White was reminded also of Swedish history in Reformation times. She wrote, Oribru was the home of two of the leaders in the Swedish Reformation, Olof and Lawrence Patterson. They were the sons of a blacksmith, but received a liberal education, studying for several years at the University of Wittenberg, under Luther and Melanchthon, where they received the doctrines of the Reformed faith. The elder of the two brothers is said to have been in the crowd before the door of the church at Wittenberg when Luther nailed his theses to it. Both were eminent for their learning and piety, and for the zeal and courage with which they advocated their faith. They are said to have resembled the great reformers of Germany. Like Melanchthon, Lawrence, the younger, was learned, thoughtful, and calm, while Olaf by his powerful eloquence aroused the people. For this reason he was often violently assailed by the mob. The Catholic priests stirred up the prejudices of the ignorant and superstitious people, so that upon several occasions the reformer barely escaped with his life. These reformers were, however, favored and powerfully assisted by the king. Under the influence of these godly men the monarch received the reformed faith. See, Olaf became preacher in the cathedral in Stockholm, Lawrence, professor of theology in the university at Uppsala. The two brothers translated the Bible into Swedish, giving to the people of that country for the first time the word of God in their native tongue. While in Örebro, Ellen White visited a little park where a monument is erected to the memory of these two brave men. The only text on the inscription is, "And they that be wise shall shine as the brightness of the firmament, and they that turn many to righteousness as the stars forever and ever." This text describes not only the Patterson brothers but the Adventist reformers also who sought to bring to a fullness the great Reformation so nobly begun in the 16th century.